Welcome to our first attempt at a podcast called Faith and Hustle. My name is Garrett Baker.
I'm Brian Hollingsworth.
And I'm Sean Bryan.
And we're going to figure this thing out.
One step at a time.
One step at a time.
On this podcast, we're going to let Brian introduce us as Garrett. Go.
Welcome to the Faith and Hustle podcast. We're going to talk about hustling backwards. Killing yourself, but just not being productive. Not making money. And just overall being frustrated. Garrett, why don't you tell us a little bit about some times where you hustled backwards?
There has been times where I hustled backwards. Notably is like the last position that I had. I was selling products and goods, really equipment, right? Mm-hmm. So I would go in, I'd initiate the sale. I would get the PO. I'd go enter the PO. Then I would go pick up the equipment. I would deliver the equipment. At times, I would have to go and fix the equipment. All the while, I had reached a plateau in the business, and I couldn't grow.
That sounds like a small business owner to me. I don't know about Sean.
Yeah. No, and I had to deal with some things in, like, with myself. I had to learn that, I had to learn to, because I used to think that I'm passive aggressive in a sense.
And okay, in what way?
At one time I tried to avoid conflict because I didn't know how to use my words. I only knew how to use my hands in conflict.
occupational hazard.
I let people run over me, believe it or not. I let people run over me and take advantage of me. And I would sit back and grin and bear it until I couldn't bear it anymore. And that was a mistake on my part because I was hustling backwards. I was extremely busy. I was not productive. I would, I would leave the house at 5:30, 6 a.m., and I wouldn't return home till 8:30, 9 at night. All the while, everybody that worked with me,
I feel like I can almost finish this thought for you. You got home, crashed in the recliner, lay down, and went, and your wife said, "What'd you do today?" "I don't have a clue, but I'm exhausted."
Yes.
Is that like a true story?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I don't have a recliner, but 100%. I'd be drained.
Yeah. Hammock or lawn chair or something.
Physically, mentally, like, I just wanted to unplug,
A wise guy once told me, he said, "Man, I don't care if you're a plumber or electrician, small business owner, you own a bakery, or, you're a coach or whatever you do. I don't care how good you are. You're only one person."
Yep.
And, I think that's a trap we've all fallen into. It's a trap that I certainly have fallen into, is not delegating things and only doing the things that only I can do.
Yeah.
I'll give credit to where credit's due, Craig Rochelle podcast on leadership. When I started with my business, actually – understanding that I need to push decision making further into my organization, that I need to have the right people and I need to trust them, I stopped hustling backwards so much.
Yeah.
Like, it feels, as an entrepreneur and as a leader, it feels like you're slacking off when you're not killing it, when you're not the worker bee, right?
Yeah,
is that what you had, in your job?
Well, in a sense, yeah. Well, not in a sense. That's exactly what it was. I felt that, it was my responsibility to do everything. And the biggest flaw that I had, though, is I celebrated people when they did what they were paid to do.
Yeah, the bare minimum, right?
The bare minimum, yeah. Couldn't do it without you, bud.
Thanks for answering the telephone.
But it created this entitlement, right? And then resentment whenever you say, "Hey, I need you to do this."
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now it creates this. And it was, I created the cancer within the business by doing the things that I did and not saying, "Okay, I got to fight for you in a different way," right? Like, I won't applaud somebody from doing their job anymore, right?
Well, we think as leaders that we're the only ones that can do this job right.
Well, yeah,
right?
I'm a words of affirmation guy.
I'm the only one that can take care of this client because they're a big client.
Yeah.
They only, respond well to me. It's because we created that.
Yeah.
Like, we created that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, let me interject a story. One of my favorite stories I've learned about business and having an employee or a team member that you actually have to make payroll.
Mm-hmm.
And, once you have two of you, there's a team effect going on. most of these small places, we don't start by hiring a 10-member team. We go get a tool and go do a job by ourselves. And then we start realizing we need help, we want to scale, we hire some help. So this is a East Texas logger, cuts trees down for a living. Got a skidder, log loader, log trucks. Every one of them's got an operator, a couple saw hands, a couple guys walking around with chainsaws, cutting the limbs, getting ready to go. And he's the owner. And he's done all of these jobs. He owns the equipment, done it all, worked his way up. And he spent 2.5 hours underneath a skidder, broke down in the woods, in the mud, on a logging road, changing out a hydraulic pump or whatever. And he said about 2.5 hours into this 4-hour job, I looked over and all my guys are just standing around. And one of them finally works up the nerve and go, "Hey, I think this skidder's going to be fixed today, or should we just go home? Because that one piece of equipment had the whole job site shut down." And he said, "You know, I thought to myself, what am I doing?" And I looked over and I started counting boots, and I counted like 12 pairs of boots pointed at me because I couldn't. He was literally underneath this piece of equipment, and he said, "That's 6 men standing there, and they're making $20 an hour, $120 an hour, watching me work." He said, "I laid my tools down, I crawled out, and I said, it's going to be here. And y'all are staying here until it's fixed. And when y'all get it fixed, go back to work." I got in my truck. I went home, took a shower, went into our swimming pool and laid out the rest of the day. And he had a moment where he went from working in his business to working on his business.
Boom.
At that point. And I heard that story 15 or 20 years ago, and it took me another 10 years to really digest it. But that's a guy that didn't go to college. That's a guy that learned the hard way, and he also took him 10 or 15 or 20 years to learn how time management is important.
Well, that's something that what you said was, that is a great quote. You know, stopped working in his business, started working on his business, because that's actually the way I look at guys, right? Like now, when there's guys that are good in business, and there's guys that are good at business, right? And I think the guys that are good in business, at times, they're not ever going to put their money up. They're never going to bet on themselves. And those are the ones that end up hustling backwards at some point, right? Like, if they do, you know. But the guys that are good at business, they learn those lessons like your buddy did on the skid steer.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, I've learned to make only the decisions that I can make in my business. And so with your guy there, he could have had his guys working on that skid steer, working as a team, and he could have been talking to whoever the guy was, that he could be scoping out the next job.
Yeah.
He could be working on ordering the parts. He could have been the guy going to get them. He could have been doing the things only he can do instead of being under that skid steer.
No, there's 100 things he could have been doing.
100 things that would have been productive
for
the
business.
He would have
been more productive looking on Facebook Marketplace for taco stands.
Seriously,
and yeah. Going and running a taco stand, because he'd have made $3 a taco,
yeah.
And it would have made more money.
Or listening on a podcast about how to financially back your business, yes. Get good business loans.
If you ever find yourself working on a piece of equipment, you should be listening to our podcast at the same time.
Absolutely, there's no reason why you shouldn't be. There's no reason not.
There's a matrix called the Eisenhower Matrix. That's try to paint a picture for it with words. Basically, it's just an X or a square. Top, it's four quadrants. Top left is urgent and important. Top right being not very urgent, but still important. The bottom left being not important at all, but urgent. And the bottom right being not urgent. And so everything we do and they can fit into one of these categories. The idea is, if it's in that top left quadrant, it is both urgent and important, you should do it. Hey, the house is on fire.
Get
you
out.
Probably should get a fire extinguisher and put the house out.
Oh, I'm not a hero, so I'm getting out.
Get out, right.
Let the insurance.
So what's something that's important but not urgent? You know, a dental appointment. Nobody wants to do that. If you don't take care of your teeth today, it'll probably be all right, you know. But you wait 6 months if you have to go get your teeth cleaned, whatever. That's okay. Let's plan that. We don't have to do that right now.
Well, addressing employee poor behavior. It's important, not always urgent. Depends on what kind of bad behavior.
It depends on the behavior. If it's scared over here throwing hands, we might have to address it right away.
That's important, but it could be just poor attitude or something of that nature.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then, so we go to the bottom half of this quadrant, the bottom left. It's not important, but it's urgent. So what's some ideas of something that's not important but urgent? I think this is the most dangerous box.
Not important but urgent.
I need to mow my grass. I really need to mow my grass in my house. So
okay.
I'm going to not check my numbers on my business this afternoon and go mow my grass.
Yeah, checking the numbers is important.
And the house is on fire, or the financial house is on fire, or I'm going to not pay my bills and forget to do something.
Some people
because I needed to mow my grass because I just wanted to.
Even replying to a customer email. Sometimes.
Oh, there we go. Checking our emails constantly.
Yeah, replying to an email sometimes it's urgent, but it's not important. Like it's okay. I mean, we'll get it. Yeah.
And then the bottom right of this, there's some not urgent, not important things. And these are the things you just want to get rid of them. You can write them down. You can check them off as trash. But, hey, we scroll through Facebook, and the next thing I know, and I'm in a meeting, I'm scrolling through Facebook, the next thing I know, I'm on Travelocity, and I'm checking out to see what a two-week trip to the south of France would look like next year. How much would that cost? Don't quit. It's good to dream.
It's not important. It's not urgent.
You literally have people, a business to run here, and this isn't the time for that. Get rid of that. So use this in your own life. Look it up. Eisenhower Matrix. Apply it. It's just a great tool. Great tool for time management.
Sometimes, though, I think that the important, not urgent things are a deflection in our day-to-day lives and business to add that fluff, right? We hit that wall. Or we get to this point where we don't know, and I will call and ask somebody that I think knows, and if they don't know, then I'll call somebody and I'll find somebody that can coach me through that moment. But there was a time in my career where I would just be stuck on stupid. So I would fill my day with these important but not urgent moments, right? Because when you'd say them, people would say, hey.
Sometimes it's calling somebody back. It's urgent. It's really not important. We make it important, but it's not important.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to die if we don't do it, right? Yeah. You know, so I think I agree with you 100% on that, a lot of the urgent, not important things, too, you can leave alone and see if some of your employees take care of.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're sucking that leadership vacuum out, and we're not allowing our employees to step into it. Sometimes if you just postpone it a little bit, sometimes you might be pleasantly surprised that somebody steps up and moves into that.
Yeah.
Even on when you're doing sales, it's urgent, to call somebody back who's looking for your product. Not always important. That one sale is not going to make or break your business. Sometimes being a slow play and let somebody else take care of that.
So how does this apply to business financially? So I would love to hear some of y'all's ideas on this, but one of the things I've come across is advertising. If I'm in I can talk about this. I don't think there's a statute of limitations on my past career, but I did oil and gas. If I had set up a billboard in Southwest Louisiana advertising my services to the drilling industry in West Texas,
mm-hmm.
because somebody showed up and gave me a great deal on that billboard, and it's $1,000 a month, it's a prideful thing. It is a complete waste of resources. It is. I'm not targeting my audience at all.
No, not at all.
And that's a pet peeve I have. I see that personally. Marketing and advertising is paramount. It has to happen. But are we targeted on it? Are we doing that right? Or are we doing it just because somebody asked us to do it? Is there other areas where these distractions or waste of efficiency from our finances, something happened to us, we didn't happen to it. It wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah, I think I've hustled backwards with my finances quite a bit over the years. I think it's pretty common for us to do, especially when you're starting up a new business. But even if you're working inside of a business, some of the common ways that I see people hustling backwards are bidding job is too low, not valuing your service because you want X job so bad.
Yeah, beating people to the bottom.
Yes, beating people to the bottom, a race to the bottom, and not being confident in what you do, not being able to differentiate what you do and what field you do. And if you can differentiate, if you know why you're good, and if you value yourself and value your service, so should your potential clients.
Yeah.
And if they can't see that, then they're not a great fit for you. But as entrepreneurs and leaders, we want to be loved and we want everybody. We want all the money. And I find that we devalue our services sometimes. I've been guilty of it as much as anybody else. Garrett, have you had that in your field?
Yeah. Yes, a lot. Well, it's the competitive nature of the industry that I work in is to beat people to the bottom, and it's the dumbest thing in the world. And
it's competitive nature for leaders, like in general, like guys like us. Well, we're competitive.
It's just it's the thing of the guys being good in business but not being good at business. The guys that they don't know how to look at the numbers as a whole. So what they do is they come in and they want to be the low man. They don't care about this guy right here's living wage, which I do because it's what I did since I graduated high school, right? Mm-hmm. So I know that these guys, in order for me to retain craftsmen, I have to compensate them, right?
Absolutely.
So my whole goal, my end game for my industry is I want to bring the living wage up. The only way that I can bring the living wage up is if I can convince you that these guys are idiots and they're going to give you a trash product, but I can't sell against them in that way, right? I have to let them expose themselves and take what I can get over here and make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a slow process when you do that because the nature of our business is you'll have if seven guys get an invitation to bid, they're racing to the bottom, and if they do have a point of contact within the, they're going to say, hey, this is the number you got to get to, and then they're going to go back and they're going to say, hey, he got to this number, can you get below that number? And
isn't it funny with government contracts and in a lot of the industrial and just financial world, when they base it solely off of price.
It's terrible.
These corporate accountants, CFOs, controllers that base things only on price actually cost their companies more. I wish we were better at actually capturing all the cost that it costs these companies to do that, because it is asinine not to allow the local leadership to pick, you know, especially when it comes to a service heavy product, and not just a product. Paper towels are paper towels.
Yeah.
But an actual service, if you pick the lowest in a service-based business, you're going to get exactly what you pay for, right? I've worked for companies that have been the cheapest, and I didn't work for them long because I couldn't stand giving such a poor product.
Yeah. And that's, man, there's the thing I love now that I'm surrounded by guys that they understand that we don't put revenue in the bank. You put profit in the bank.
Say
that again.
No. You do not put revenue in the bank. You cannot put revenue in the bank. You put profit in the bank. So that's where your cash flow.
That's where you hustle backwards.
Yeah.
All these people out here, they're boast about I made $3 million, $4 million, whatever's big for your small business. Maybe it's 13, 15, 20 million. It don't matter if it's just revenue.
Well, that's I'm probably gonna get shot for saying this, but that's the model that's been created by private equity, right? Private equity, they're looking for the next flip. So the next flip is, okay, if I can generate XYZ revenue and show this number in EBITDA, you know, like we're going to be very profitable in this region or this part of the business. Or you get what I'm saying?
I do.
And that's they're looking for the flip. Yeah,
they're going to cut expenses and they're going to show a good number, but it's not a real number because it's not sustainable.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they actually put revenue in the bank in a sense, because what they're doing is they're going to leverage those numbers.
Yeah, they refinance it.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the struggle of it all. It's like You have a lot of guys that in our industry that's all they've came up in is in that world with private equity, which I don't, and I'm not trying to disrespect.
It's gotten better over the years. I feel like some of them are in it for a little bit longer. It's not just that 5 to 7 years. Some of them are actually in it for the 10 or 12, and they're gonna sell when it makes sense instead of just having a preconceived notion.
Yeah.
So some of them are getting better and they're getting smarter because they know ultimately it's better for financial and the money drives everything. But I'll say, to get back to hustling backwards for a small business owner or just an entrepreneur, I've got a business right now. Fantastic young business. You know, we've been, you know, in business 2-3 years now. And we're looking at the numbers. We finally got to a point where we can take our breath. We made a ton of mistakes early on with cash flow issues, which we'll do another podcast and we'll just talk about starting up a small business. I think we could do 2 or 3 podcasts on that, but you know, some of the mistakes that I've made personally, and I know that y'all have been involved of as well. This business is doing great. It's starting to come into its own. It's doing $2+ million worth of gross revenue. But our numbers last year, we did 4%. 4% is what we kept. And Garrett, what did you say about the revenue?
You don't put revenue in the bank.
You don't put revenue in the bank. You put profit in the bank. So we've got some debt on the business because of some poor decisions that we made early on, and we need to start putting some of the profit in the bank and be able to pay down on that. So we started looking at the jobs, and in our market, we're starting to do really well. We are starting to dominate the local market in what we do, and it's a niche field. It's a competitive field. There's a lot of other people, big boys out there that are owned by private equity that we're competing against, and we're branching out a little bit into 2 states. We're getting in some different markets, but really our local market, we're creating a name for ourselves because we have good service. We have the right people. We're doing all these things correctly, and I'm really proud of our team doing it, but I've been screaming at them, guys, something's wrong because we're not priced right or our expenses are too high, because 4% is not private equity ain't getting out of bed for 4%. Like, in our business, we should be making, you know, 10 to 20%. 15 is probably a good goal to have, but at minimum 10
on the EBITDA level.
Oh, on the EBITDA, yeah, I'm thinking 15 to 20% is kind of where we want to be.
I'm just jumping in here.
Yeah,
I know what EBITDA is. There are people listening that are not familiar with that term.
So EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Most people that are listening to our broadcast will probably think of it as your profit margin, quote unquote.
Bottom line.
You can name it a lot of things, but our business was only doing 4%. And I said, guys, we got to dig into our numbers. Knowing your numbers when you're bidding jobs and valuing what you do. So we've created this value in the market. Everybody knows that we have good employees. We give a great service in the market, and they're really doing a great job of that. Now I'm like, guys, let's dig into these. So we spend several days in a row. We meet. I tell them I want these numbers. We break it down even further. Okay, let's look at how much per job. Maybe we break it down to how much per customer that we have, all these different jobs. And I've already looked, we spent the first year really looking at expenses. All of last year we looked at expenses, and I think we did a great job of setting good budgets for our expenses. But we've done all we can do at this point. So now I'm like, let's go look at our pass-through rates or our EBITDA on a lot of our jobs. Let's break them down to individual instead of just looking at these big P&Ls.
So we're starting to talk about job costing.
Job costs for individual jobs. That's right. And we even said clients. I said, let's break it down by client, because we only have maybe 20, 25 clients in this area. We started breaking it down. Two of our top, like, 4 clients, not you know, some of the ones that we're actually spending a lot of time with, we were losing money. Literally losing, like, I would say 30%. And they were shocked to be able to see this.
But now, like on the bill rate of the technician, or?
Yeah, so it's in our business, you bill a bill rate of an employee, but you also bill like a per x-ray a fee, a lot of times film, and then sometimes a day fee for a truck, depending on what's that. And their minimum were too low, so they were calling us out for these short jobs. They were 2 and 3 hours, so our minimums were too low, and we were getting killed on those. And what they told us we were shooting in film was not actually what we were getting. So we were basing it off a certain number of, hey, we're going to do 50 shots a day, and we were doing less than half that. So we found out we were working and losing money. Like, literally, we had all these jobs that were positive. 2 out of 20, guys. The other ones were fine. I mean, we needed to adjust a few here and there. But it only took 2 of our jobs, and we didn't even realize our numbers. When we broke it down, we immediately went to the customers. We talked to them. Hey, they were 2 of our biggest customers. We had a relationship. They knew we were good. They valued our service, but we didn't value our service. We went in there. We told them, hey, we've compiled this data. We figured out we're losing money. We care about you guys. You're a valued client. And we want to be able to continue doing business with you. But to do that, we're going to have to increase our rates. And here's the different rate increases. They made those decisions. I didn't make those decisions because only they can make them. They're the expert in that field. I'm just an investor in their business that tries to mentor them a little bit. And I'll tell you, they did it on their own. Once they saw it, the light bulb clicked off. And I'm like, guys, y'all are killing yourselves. I didn't say it. I didn't say hustling backwards, but I said, guys, you're killing yourselves right into bankruptcy. You know? Yeah. And it was amazing to see a light bulb go off in a new entrepreneur's head. They started seeing it. And we can come back to this in 3 or 4 months. I'm very transparent about our businesses. And if anybody wants to, you know, even DM us or anything else like that, I'll definitely go through a show. I'll share P&Ls and any kind of financial information and show you where we've done better and where we've done worse. And we another one is we do KPI spreadsheets to make sure this key performance indicator spreadsheets to make sure that we're not hustling backwards. Yeah. Because I've done it in my businesses so long. There's nothing more demoralizing to a team than to be given great customer service, do all the right things, but not know your numbers, yeah, or not be able to like Sean was saying before, not be able to delegate to the right people, yeah, like you did in your business.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to say this with absolute compassion, because I have done it and I've got these bumps and I've got these bruises. It's a great hobby to provide excellent customer service, bring people in the door, shake hands with them, hug them, love them. Just have a great relationship. But it's a great hobby, and it's a great disgrace to yourself to fail at it financially. Mm-hmm. You have to go back behind those closed doors and do those numbers. If you don't, you won't be doing it for very long.
Yeah. You're lucky, though. You grew up a numbers guy that didn't want to be locked in the room.
I'm going to let you tell that story for me.
His dad was a numbers guy. It doesn't mean he was a numbers guy.
Well, you grew up in an environment, you know, a lot of us, like, my dad was a numbers guy, but a private numbers guy, right? So was your dad that way as well?
He would share with me when I wanted to know okay, about it. Mostly, I wanted the revenue, not the profit.
Okay.
So when I was starting out,
he was ego hustling
early on. Yeah, absolutely.
Ego hustling. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. Hey, ego hustling is I tell guys all the time, man, like, don't look at that year to date. You know, these guys that are like, I call them, it's going to sound derogatory, but I call them clock suckers, that they want to bill 84 hours a week and all this other stuff. And you're hustling for that year to date, you know. But your take home ain't matching that.
I remember for years. It took me a decade to break $1 million top line revenue from a startup. I mean, from me in a pickup truck and a toolbox. And when I did it, you know, it's the glass ceiling, right? Once you figure out, because there's a little bit of a crack the code, you know. Once you break that first $1 million gross revenue, once you figure it out, well, then you can do it. I remember it was the same year that I broke $1 million. This is a fun story. I had cashed some revenue checks, but I had expenses to pay. And so I took my wife and we went to the ATM on our way to eat out at a really nice restaurant. And I printed off, I think I got $300 cash out for dinner that night, back when you could go to a fancy restaurant for $300 cash.
Dang, man. Go ahead, Sean.
I threw the slip at her, and it said $101,000 was the balance. And she's just sitting there with her mouth open, and eyes wide open. I said, yep, We're going to go party tonight. We're going to go eat a big steak dinner. We're going to have a great night out in the town. And tomorrow I'm going to spend $100 of that $101,000 on bills. But I wanted to get this $300 out while it was still in there before the checks cleared. No
doubt. I know the feeling. Yeah. I know the feeling. A lot of times we have a key performance indicator spreadsheet for one of my businesses. And, you know, when it looks good, it might be upwards to $1 million. And then I always ask her, I know that's how much we have in the bank today, but how much do we really have in the bank? And she knows because all the checks that are in the mail that haven't been cashed yet. Oh yeah, we got half that.
You know, so there's
it's
the
an ego. It's yeah. It'll keep you in check. It'll keep you humble.
there's the story that I think Kenny Chesney wrote a song about it, and he goes down to Mexico and he goes and he pays all the money for the catch of the day, the local fisherman, and he overpays for it, and he's like, man, don't worry about it, I make a good living back home, you know. And he's like, I appreciate you overpaying for these fish. He said, I make a good living too, you know. And the moral of the story, when you really dig into it, is we work for 30 or 40 years to retire, to have the disposable income to go fishing.
Yeah.
Those guys do it all day long.
Yeah.
They start out at the day they're born living our retirement dream. And
so they ain't hustling backwards. They're doing it right.
They live and retire.
And, you know, we're kind of wrapping up here, but I work with, we can talk, this is going to be a great podcast one day. We'll talk about it. But I do work with some Mexican fishermen that tourism is their business.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I learned, and I heard one talking to another one, they were discussing some people that wanted a discounted rate because it was a slow season, or that, you know, he said don't give discounts. Don't take the tour. Don't give a discount and just break even just to get a tour. Don't do that, because when you do that, you're slapping your seasonal customers, your repeat customers, in the face. Mm-hmm. They're there. Mm-hmm. They're paying you a solid wage for a solid product.
Yeah.
That's a good deal. Don't slap these other guys in the face by taking it. Somebody you don't know and you don't have a relationship with, and you're going to give it to them for half the price just so you can go tear up your boat and burn gas and use up resources.
You're devaluing the product.
And that's a lesson I learned from people that forget high school.
Yeah.
They learned their education on a boat.
Yeah.
No, that's a great point. I mean, you got to value your service. And if you're going to give it to you cheaper for somebody who's just going, then the ones that actually are your bread and butter, they're repeat customers, that is a slap in the face to them. You know, just to recap for everybody out there, hustling backwards. There's a lot of ways to hustle backwards. You can hustle backwards by trying to do everything yourself because you're the only one that can do it. And not really realizing that you have a team and effectively using that team around you, that is definitely a way to hustle backwards. Another way to hustle backwards is not understand your value of your service and your company to your clients, and underbidding and undervaluating and not understanding that you're losing money on a cupcake that you're selling, or it could be that you're cleaning somebody's house. But understanding what your true expenses are of your business and what revenue you should be bringing in per hour or per unit of what you're selling is vitally important. And I know a lot of people are looking at this going, yeah, no kidding, no kidding. But you'll be surprised at how many businesses have left money on the table, even if they may be profitable. You might have that 10 or 15%, but you should be pulling in 25 or 30, and good for you. But you don't know until you really know your numbers. So I would challenge everybody today, make sure you're utilizing your team, you're driving all of the decision making deeper into your organization, allowing your people to make those decisions, that you only do what only you can do in your organization, that you dig into your expenses, control them, and understanding what your market is and your value and your EBITDA per job. Get you a key performance indicator spreadsheet. It's going to be different from everybody. And we'll do some podcasts on that KPIs later on how to create one and how we've done it. But, you know, I appreciate everybody's time today. I hope some of our experiences will definitely keep you from making some of the mistakes we have. If you have any comments or questions, as always, go down below. Ask us questions in the comments. Tell us some of your stories. Of course, hit the like and share button. We thank you for listening, and can't wait to talk to you next week.
But I'm not pushing a stop button just yet.
Okay.
Because you brought us in, and that was an excellent departure from this podcast. But we got to hear the one and the only Garrett's close us out with that sexy voice.
Absolutely.
So, I need everyone out there in the listening realm to understand, you do not put revenue in the bank. You put profit in the bank. Goodbye.
My man. Absolutely.